Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the church today. Luther and Modern Art is the topic of today's show with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
Welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor. We're very happy to have with us today Dr. Daniel Seidel. He is the presidential scholar and art historian in residence at King's College in New York City. And he is here in Cambridge giving a presentation on Luther and modern art, a reappraisal. And we've managed to corral him and have a chat with him. So we're very excited to have you with us today, Dan. Nice to have you with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Now, when we hear the words Luther and modern art, I don't often associate the two. How did you come to think about this or put these two, what seem to me to be quite different things together?
Well, they are quite different, and I've tried to approach the relationship of Luther's thought to the history and development of modern art, which is my particular area of interest, from a couple different perspectives. One is modern art is understood as a deeply secular art, that it is operating outside the context of the church, that that what marks the development of modern art is art that is not altarpieces and church decoration. And Luther is certainly responsible in many ways for creating a space. Some would say disenchanting and secularizing art by providing theological warrant for it to be seen as a distraction in the context of the church. And yet also what that does is create this quite robust secular space in which art, artistic practice could develop in many ways without the limitations, the dogmatic limitations of the church. And so I've been very interested in what can be seen as a negative as Luther is reducing the church's role as patron in the visual arts is actually in many ways an engine that drives a particular kind of development of art that that isn't operating within those strictures of liturgical and sacramental furniture. And I think that's significant.
So how did that engine then start up and how did he help drive that different change in philosophy?
Well, certainly the focus for Luther was hearing the word, and the visual arts were not, if the visual arts could serve didactic purposes, he was supportive of it. But the kind of visual piety, the visual decoration, the opulence, the optical component, which he would call a theology of glory, could stop up the ears. That the ear needed to hear the word of accusation and then the word of grace. And so, with preaching and the preached word as a focal point, the visual component of the visual richness, you could say, of the Catholic faith was reduced, and that meant then that churches didn't have as much need for the various kinds of visual decoration in the churches that would, in the context of the services, that would facilitate the worship. And so what that does then is create, in many ways, it liberates the visual arts from having to be beholden to church dogma. And so while in, say, during the Renaissance and in the pre-Reformation art, and certainly during the Catholic Counter-Reformation, the church was a patron, Catholic Church was a patron for the artists, but the artists were deeply censored, and the artists did not have the kind of freedom that they would enjoy working outside the bounds of the church, in which what could be the subject of painting in the secular world could be everyday banal life, and not virtuous heroic actions, not depictions of from the Gospels or the Scriptures or other Christian narratives, but ordinary life lived lived under the sun.
And with Luther, I mean, he's associated with some artists like Cranach and, and Dürer and some of these folks. And again, as you mentioned, he used their talents for woodcuts, for paintings, to really bring out the gospel message. But those guys had careers outside of that as well, too. Theirs wasn't just based upon painting scripture. Do you think that Luther had some influence in that, or was that just happenstance or circumstance?
Well, certainly there was. Luther and Cranach were quite close, and it was Cranach's, from what I understand, it was Cranach's printing press that was instrumental in disseminating much of Luther's writings, and Cranach's experience with Frederick the Wise was very helpful when he was trying to figure out how to deal with this rather vocal professor. And also Cranach was, while he was helping Luther think through what a Lutheran visual aesthetic might be, and he was doing that, and he was doing that work with Luther, he was also painting commissions for Catholic churches. He was a businessman, and he had a studio to run, and he had his work was high, his style was highly sought after. And so I think I don't think Luther felt that there was that Cranach's work had to be censored in any way. Cranach was famous for beautiful and seductive nudes that he painted, and I don't think Luther had anything negative to say about them. Luther's concern with the visual arts was simply that it could serve a didactic and pedagogical function, and he was fine to allow it to exist. But what I find truly important is that his understanding of vocation, which seems to be an outgrowth, clearly is an outgrowth of his understanding of justification by faith, creates the space where the dignity of day-to-day work, whatever that day-to-day work is and day-to-day subject matter, was seen as where God could be active. That means that a painting of a tree is just as powerful theologically as a painting of Christ on the cross. That there isn't any necessarily an overly spiritualized aesthetic, and Luther opens up that space for paintings of overlooked objects, of things that we don't take as significant. And that's something that artists working in the modern tradition in the 19th century were famous for. It's the still lifes. It's the sunrises. It's the everyday genre scenes of life being lived in daily life that takes on an integrity and grandeur. It doesn't have to be God creating Adam and these dramatic moments from the scriptures.
But it's still good first article stuff.
It's good first article stuff, absolutely.
And your contention is that Luther's understanding of vocation really helps open that up. And again, I think if we fast forward again into the modern art, I think people might say, okay, that we understand that in some of the landscapes and some of the portraits. But what about some of the more modern art? How does that really fit into the situation? I mean, I can't see anything in that.
Sure, and part of what the modern artist wants to do is make art that is responsive to the moment, to make what they would often call a living art. And much of that living art that's responsive of the moment, from the French Revolution or from whatever political or cultural crisis you want to put it at, has much to do with existential angst and threat and confusion as institutional structures, as the traditional institutional structures are crumbling and shifting, and with the incredible violence and revolutions of the 19th century and into the 20th century, the question of meaning and how is life meaningful? Those questions that were already answered in the kind of in a unified Christendom, in a theological world, and the post-theological world are ripped apart, and there is something honest about that. For example, in the late 19th century, the Norwegian painter Edvard Munch painted a series of paintings called The Scream, and most everybody is familiar with it in one way or another. And it's an awkward, childlike most genderless figure standing on a bridge with this desperate scream. And the sky is turbulent. And that is an expression of confusion and lamentation and fear that is a deeply human response. An honest one. And Munch described, he said that there was he did have an experience on that bridge, and he felt a powerful, silent scream course through his body. And to read his description of that, it's hard for me not to think about Luther's description of the tortured conscience and his own struggle with feeling the pressure of the hidden God, of what happens when God removes his presence, and that sense of desperation. And I think I think what modern art does is can do and has done is give visual shape to that deep human cry that we do a lot to try to, particularly as moderns, we do a lot to avoid it. We have lots of technologies that keep us from dealing with the pain and loneliness and that distract us from that basic, profound human experience of fear that the gospel is the answer to. But oftentimes we don't have the courage to ask that question or to be reminded that that outside of Christ we are alone. And Munch is honestly offering that. And one of the values, I think, of paying attention to modern art is to pay attention to that space of lamentation that's opened up, and that there's something significant about and deeply human, and something that God honors and gives human beings space to cry out, to ask where he is. And we see that in the Psalms, and we see it in Jeremiah, we see it in Job, that cry is in many ways is the requirement. Is that God comes where he's needed, and the need needs to be articulated in some way. And what I've found in many artists is that that some of the paintings are articulations in paint of that need. Some seem to get really close to it. Some feel like some just seem to touch the truth. And for me as a Christian that takes modern art seriously, it reminds me that that's a dimension of my human experience, and that's a significant human experience.
And earlier we were talking as well that modern art is not afraid to use some Christian symbols and Christian iconography. Can you tell us why they use that, how they use that, and for what purposes they use that? Is that also lament, or is that pointing out different things as well?
Well, I think there's artists that are working, say, in the modern tradition in the 19th century, are operating in a context in which that imagery and iconography is around, and they've grown up with it, and it has aesthetic and narrative power. And to be able to use Christ-like references can bring in aspects of Christ's of passion, of his claim for universal as a cure for universal suffering. All of those values that are that have an emotional impact, that will have an emotional impact on the viewer as well, whether or not they're operating in the context of belief or in the context of a liturgical service, the work differs. A crucifix in a context of a church has a particular function. A crucifix in a painting hanging in a gallery has a different function. It's doing something else. And the artist has more freedom to be able to use that, to use the figure of Christ, for example, and mobilize that figure in different ways, but retain a certain sense of the meaning that comes from the narratives and comes from the church. I don't think the Judeo-Christian tradition, particularly the Christian tradition, is vibrant in the modern tradition. It's utilized differently. It's not utilized in the service of liturgy or orthodox confessional faith. It's used as a way to try to find a way to understand, say, human experience more generally. And particularly in the 19th and in the 20th century, the notion of Christianity wasn't just Christianity in general. It was Catholicism. It was that. It was the Catholic Church as opposed to the Reformed Church. It was the wars. It was the kind of fighting and killing that was associated with not sharing the same language in the confessions. And so there was a desire to see Jesus as symbolic of something universal and not something polemically dogmatic in terms of partisan, that nations would go to war, or churches would burn human beings at the stake. So that was an aspect of that, a belief that Jesus did represent something true, but that truth just couldn't possibly be embodied in the arguments between the Catholics and the Protestants. It had to be someplace else. And so many painters and musicians and artists were thinking about the arts as a place where maybe the values that Jesus represents could be best expressed there.
So are there any other structures or aspects of Luther's teaching that you found helpful when looking at modern art?
One of the things I've found, and that a lot of my colleagues will simply dismiss this question as ignorance or anti-intellectualism or philistinism, but I really embrace it and think it's a really key, important component that I think Luther can be very helpful. And that is the criticism that you'll get from a general layperson about a painting, say a Jackson Pollock painting, or of just drips on the canvas, and they'll say, "Well, my kid can do that," and it's childlike. It's not Michelangelo. It's not. There's no genius there. An artist can't make works of art that I think I can do. So part of what makes a work of art a work of art is that I can't do it. And I look at these paintings, and it looks like a child can do it. And I've always tried to emphasize the fact that that is actually, in many ways, very true, that what the artist was trying to do is to unlearn some of that technological expertise that many artists believed actually blocked human experience. That there is a certain innocence of a child and a child's drawing that gives an authenticity to the child's experience of the world, precisely because the child doesn't have the tools to express all that he or she is feeling about what he or she wants to draw. So he wants to draw mom and dad, and he wants to draw his family, but he doesn't have the draftsmanship and the skill to render a likeness that would convince us. But he's using what he has, the skills that he has, to express this emotion that he feels that his mom and dad and his family is his world, that it means everything to him. And we sense that. We sense that authenticity. We sense the striving to represent something that just cannot be represented. And modern artists wanted to connect with that. They wanted that aspect that the world was wonderful and mysterious, and that the artist wasn't an artist because they were an expert or they were a technician and they were a genius. It was because they were a child before it, and that kind of awkwardness that we will often see in modern paintings is a fragility and is a vulnerability that reveals that art just simply an artist just simply cannot capture the magic of life. And I've really appreciated Luther's distinctions between theologies of glory and theologies of the cross. And I imagine medieval and Renaissance painting and church-sponsored painting and state-sponsored paintings operate in the register of theologies of glory. You represent heroic deeds, and you represent kings as gods, and you represent heroic actions that show great feats of virtue and miracles and the visual dazzling that is quite compelling and seductive. But modern art seems to focus on its weakness, that it's not that, it's something else, that in its inability to really be able to master the world visually. And modern art, the development of modern art, has its own hubris, has its own extravagances, has its own tragic distortions. But there is something that I wouldn't call it a theology of the cross, but I would certainly call it a foregrounding of the vulnerability and fragility of painting, that as profound as it can be, it's profound in its absurdity, that a person would spend their life making paintings reveals something of the deeper secrets of the world that official art doesn't quite seem to catch that spirit. So that's an aspect, the distinction between the theology of glory and the theology of the cross. I also think the distinction between law and gospel, that there is a space for painting to represent not just virtuous behavior, but it needs to give voice to the cry of where are you, and the cry of fear and the cry of lamentation. And I think that is a valid expression.
Within modern art, I'm very interested in this. You talk about its vulnerability, its angst, its cry for help. Does modern art, or is there a segment of modern art that deals with death then, or even redemption?
Well, without question, it certainly deals with death. The question of where redemption comes from is the open question. That death is truly, could say that death is the underlying baseline of many traditions in modern art. The question is where redemption comes from. And I think what's interesting to me as I've been thinking about it is that there's a desire for it. There's a hope for it. There is a, I think, and in some ways, there's the very expression of it is the painting itself, is the fact that painting exists, that a painter makes a painting and continues to make paintings is an expression of that hope, that there is, and the courage to lament is a belief in that hope. You know, the lament operates in the register of believing the promise and not seeing the promise, thinking that all the visual evidence is to the contrary, that God isn't a God of keeping his promise. And that lament is in many ways comes out of a desire to believe, or a belief that wants evidence. And so I've begun to think about that. I begin to think about whether Munch has the answer, or there is redemption. Clearly, what he sees is painting operating in some way as a register of grace, or the echoes of grace. That there are many ways that a person can deal with that kind of anxiety. They can commit suicide. They can despair and do a lot of different things. But Munch paints. He goes into a studio and he makes paintings. And there's something in that practice that seems incredibly hopeful to me. Just the existence of the arts, the existence of poems and paintings and songs, is a testimony or a sacrament of redemption, that it's there somewhere. And perhaps in the modern world, and particularly during the time that I'm looking at art from this period, from the middle of the 19th century to the middle of the 20th century in particular, maybe that's all we can ask for. That's all they can give us. And that could be enough. There's something there. There's just a little a light behind a closed door, and you see the crack of you see the light coming through the crack. Perhaps certainly not something that the artist had intended, but it's something that the artist, just in the very by virtue of making the work that they're doing, begins to seep through. Perhaps.
So let's bring it into our context then. Say I walk into the Tate Modern Art Gallery. We know Luther talked about the hiddenness of God, or God using masks. How can I see God masked in those paintings or those sculptures there?
Well, I think one of the things that Luther can help us with is not to feel that there are the presuppositions that there is some secret, there's some secret code or some secret answer that the sophisticated have, the priests of art have, that the laity don't have. That the artist is making, whether it's a, no matter what the work of art looks like, the artist is not making a work of art for a curator or for a critic or for a sophisticated theorist. The artist is making a work of art for a human being, for a suffering, hoping heart, doubting heart, that stands before it. And so however one accesses the work of art, one doesn't need to know everything or anything about the artist or anything about the histories of art. There's there's an emotional, there can be some emotional hook that can allow you in. But there isn't a single meaning that you miss or you get. And that's one thing with my, I spent 10 years as a museum curator and speaking about art to various audiences with various levels of interest and disinterest, and expertise and lack of expertise. And my focus was to just provide a point of entry where a person could experience the humanity of it. I think that's the one aspect of it, that it's a, and one of the things I've been thinking about over the past few years is looking at an artist's works, like going to an exhibition and looking into a room. For example, at the Tate, the Robert Rauschenberg exhibition is open now. This is an artist who has spent over 60 years making works of art. Whether one responds to those works of art or not, what one way to approach it is that this is the manifestation of a vocation. And these objects, whether they conform to what we think art is or however they were received by the art world, is one question or is one issue. The other issue, this is just the work. These are creative culture. These are artifacts made by a human being that shaped his life. That's an amazing thing, that you can go to a number of rooms in a museum and see the evidence of a human being's vocation is really very profound and quite moving. And as an art historian, I want to emphasize that human aspect of the artist, who isn't the creative genius, but simply the human being who's trying to find his or her place in the world and doing that through the vocation of artist. And if God is, if as I believe the Luther's understanding of vocation is right, that God is at work in the world through vocations, God is at work in the world through the vocation of the artist, whatever that means, and however we understand that, that can be an approach that can at least give a sense of, provide and open up a little bit of space for that work to not be so intimidating or sealed off from us because we haven't taken those art history classes. And I mean, 90% of the time, 90% of the questions I get after I give lectures will come from people that will say, I'm not an expert, I know nothing about art. And then they'll ask a question. And the question is insightful and it's thoughtful and it's very helpful. But there's this burden that one isn't an expert, that one doesn't have the training. And I think that, and I think Luther would say that many in his congregation were intimidated by the clerics and the priests and felt that they couldn't be the kind of Christian that that they were because they didn't have the training. And that's precisely not what Luther believed. And so I think that is can be a way that that you open up art through the human way, through the actions. What would make it, and it motivates me, what makes a human being devote their entire life to making artwork, to going into a studio and making paintings, when there are so many other more publicly recognized beneficial jobs than making paintings? And what is it in that that makes that, why do they do that? And that to me begins to reveal certain aspects, mysteries of maybe the world doesn't quite work as the way we think it does, and that that God is present in those places where you don't really expect him. And so maybe certainly nobody expects him in the contemporary art world, which makes me think that's exactly where he may be.
Which kind of leads me on to my, where I was wanting to go as well, is when you are there at an art gallery or an art exhibition with a friend or a colleague or a spouse, are there good ways of leading what you see, what you're experiencing, to talk to them about the gospel, or perhaps somebody that you don't even, or isn't even a Christian? What are good ways of picking out points there and leading them to the gospel?
Well, there are a couple different, two different responses, two, I think, really closely related. One is, Luther liberates us from the burden of having to do that. So you can make paintings and be the best painter you possibly can in the historical moment that you are, in which painting has a particular kind of institutional, there are conventions and conversations that are taking place that take place at this particular moment, and be the best painter you can that are responding to those questions. And you're liberated from that burden of having to make paintings that evangelize. However, when you talk about the integrity of human work, you talk about vulnerability, you talk about lamentation, you talk about emotional angst, all of a sudden you're talking about what everybody feels. And they rarely believe that the art gallery is a place where they can feel that, or they can have it heard, or feel represented. So if I'm giving a tour and I present paintings like this, then it's going to kick up aspects of an existential angst or an experience that can be the basis of further questions about spirituality, about faith, that happened simply by me doing my job as an art historian, not having to wedge the painting into a good, true, and the beautiful format, or trying to get at certain kinds of Christian content. What I do, though, as a Christian who notices Christian iconography that often may get overlooked by other art historians in paintings, I can bring that out, and then I can not just mention it, but then give a few more sentences that reveal it in a more constructive way, in a more serious way, that can open up some opportunities too.
Well, we thank you very much for your time, for your insight into this very interesting field. But we can't let you go until you tell us a little bit more about the King's College in New York City and your work there as the art historian. Can you tell us what you do there?
Sure. The King's College is an evangelical Christian liberal arts college located in the financial district in Manhattan, right on Wall Street. And I teach classes on modern contemporary art. And I work with students who for the most part are they're Christians. They're come from a North American evangelical context, and yet they're a little different in that they're studying in New York City and they're not in some kind of protected enclave somewhere else in the United States. And so I have students that are particularly interested in. In the arts and in creativity and in culture and relationship to the church, and doing it in the context of New York City is a different kind of a dynamic context. And certainly what I have access to are the museums as classrooms. And so we spend a lot of time at the Museum of Modern Art, at the Metropolitan Museum. And so using those cultural sites as classrooms has been very helpful to me, but also, I think, transformative for the students. And it's a small school. My daughter attends, and she's actually a student in my classes. So I get to spend some time with her as not only as dad, but as professor. And it's I experienced, growing up as a Christian, I experienced a lot of pressure and tension, not explicit, it was implicit, about the Christian's role in culture and whether this is what a Christian should be doing, spending time looking at paintings. And I want to share my experience with those students, and I know that they experience those questions, and looking at modern contemporary art as a way of thinking through not just art, but thinking through vocation and what it means to be present in the world.
Dr. Daniel Seidel, thank you very much for your time and helping us to perhaps put a new perspective on what it is to look at modern art and how we do it. And we pray God's richest blessings upon you in your teaching and in your vocation.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure for me.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.